Yes, welcome to the dark. It's time once again to chat from the darkness. My name is Scott Swenson, and this is A Scott in the Dark. And on this particular episode, we are going to address the question, is Halloween dead? Now, since I don't know when you're listening to these particular podcasts or reading the blog posts, I need to give you a little bit of historic perspective as to why I'm recording this. This is actually being recorded on July 25th, 2020. And if you're looking at the calendar or you're listening to this shortly after that period of time, you know that as of yesterday, Universal Studios announced that Halloween Horror Nights will not be happening this year. They announced that yesterday. And so both in California and in Florida, it will not be happening. And it's the most recent of several haunted attractions that have decided that 2020 probably isn't going to be the year for them. They've probably gone back and for, I'm sure, plenty of different reasons, made the decision not to operate this year. And since that's happened, I will tell you that the internet and social media has just blown up. People asking questions like, oh my gosh, is Halloween gone forever? Who killed Halloween? Was COVID, was this just another COVID fatality? The whole Halloween season, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I wanted to record something because I've got, and I'm sure it will come as no surprise, I've got plenty of opinions on this particular topic. And I want to make sure that we have the opportunity to kind of talk through it with a little bit of rationality. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to take this show and break it into two parts. I want to talk first to haunters, because I know that out of my tens and tens of listeners, that quite a few of you are haunted attraction owners or operators or actors or designers, costumers, whatever. And then I want to talk to the haunt fans. And I realize that so many of the second category actually fall into the first category as well, and that's why you do it for a living. But let's talk about haunters first. You know, it was probably a huge decision that took a great deal of discussion for Universal Studios to not do their 30th year in Orlando of Halloween Horror Nights. This is a big, big deal. As many of you know, theme parks and their Halloween events, especially Universal Studios, as well as Busch Gardens and SeaWorld and I'm sure Six Flags, the Halloween events make a ton of money. So they're a very important part of the annual revenue stream. So for a theme park to decide not to do it is not a light decision. It's a decision that I'm sure has a great deal of research that goes into it. And the question is now being asked, well, if the big parks with their, you know, huge budgets can't seem to make money off of Halloween during a pandemic, shouldn't we all just close? Or should we all just close, I guess, is probably the real question. And I wanted to kind of break that down a little bit. I think the thing that we have to take into consideration is every different haunt has a different business model. There are similarities, obviously, but they have a different business model, a different way of approaching it, and a different way of generating profit. For large theme park events, they are numbers driven, and I mean that as far as attendance numbers. The more people that you can put into the parks during the Halloween events, the more money they make. It's all about packing people in. Well, obviously, packing people in is something that has been cautioned against, certainly, and especially in Florida, California, and Texas. So since Universal Halloween Horror Nights is biggest in Florida and California, it makes sense that in those hot spots of COVID testing positive people, that's not exactly the way I wanted to phrase that, but you kind of know what I mean. In those particular states, it's probably not a wise idea to do an event that puts people in shoulder to shoulder. And, you know, obviously all haunters want to have the most attendance they possibly can, but I just have to point out it's imperative in large theme park haunts. Otherwise, they can't generate enough revenue to justify the amount that they're spending. Another thing that I think needs to be considered when you're looking at the large theme park haunted attractions is that they basically start building in at the beginning of the year. You know, I know that when I was working for Hollow Scream, we would have to have our designs completed by mid-February of the year, so we could get them bid out and get construction going. And at that time, Universal Studios was actually ahead of Busch Gardens Tampa. So they've already, I mean, by the time COVID-19 became something that we all had to deal with, they were already well under construction for their event. So to change it based on recent information is probably difficult, not to mention costly. So as the restrictions or suggestions change, it's very difficult for them to nimbly and cost-effectively redirect themselves. Think of it like this. An aircraft carrier can do a ton of amazing things. You can launch, well, as the name suggests, you can launch aircraft off of them. But they can't turn quickly. It takes them miles and miles to actually turn a vessel that large. However, a little speedboat, a little powerboat, can turn quickly and move around and dart around and be very nimble and agile in its navigation. These are like the two business models between a theme park haunt and an individual haunt. The individual haunt has the ability to be more nimble. They may not have the giant powerhouse budgets, but because they don't have the giant powerhouse budgets, they also don't have the long lead timeline that some of the larger haunts and theme park haunts actually have. So the question that, again, a lot of people have been asking is, should everybody close? And I don't know the answer. I really don't know the answer. I think that is up to each individual owner. I know that there are some independent haunts that have made the decision not to operate this year, and they've clearly gone through their numbers, and they've clearly gone through all of the exercise of what's it going to cost us, will we be able to make enough money, and, you know, they've clearly made the decision the only way to win is not to play, which I understand completely. They understand their needs and their business model certainly better than I do. But some other things to consider is, if these smaller haunts do have the ability to adapt more quickly, perhaps they can find ways to open their doors and still be safe. I will tell you, if you are planning on opening your haunted attraction exactly the way you closed it last year, chances are good you're not going to have a good year. It's not going to be successful. And you may not even open because of local authorities. And if you do open, I think the word will get out that, you know, it's an unsafe environment and people won't come. So it kind of, again, reinforces that ridiculous mantra that I keep pounding into people's heads. And that is, don't panic, just pivot. You have to find new ways to design, rethink, and reestablish. You can't just say, okay, we're going to make everybody wear masks and wash their hands. You have to enforce it. You have to find ways to make that work with the haunted attraction itself. I mean, I will give you a perfect example. One of my clients right now, we've been working on this for quite some time, and we actually put into the design all of the current CDC regulations. And yes, I know there are people listening who don't think the CDC regulations make sense, or they, you know, are political, or I don't know. There's people who don't agree with them necessarily, but they are something. They are a way of measuring what we're doing. And so what we have done is we have created haunt experiences where the guests are separated as they go in. I mean, it kind of goes back to the old days of, you know, the heavy duty pulse in a haunted attraction, where you let some people in, make sure they never see another guest through their entire experience. That's kind of what we're aiming for. We've also require everybody, all of the guests, to wear masks when they come to the event. We are also costuming, so all of the characters, all of the actors who are playing characters within the haunt, all of the haunts, are wearing masks. And we are also designing the haunt so that there is a 6-foot circumference space bubble around each and every performer. And that is being reinforced with scenic. It's being reinforced with escape routes so that the performer can startle and back away so that the guest can't get any closer to them. It's all been part of the design. Now, I realize that if you've got a 6-foot bubble around your performers, that they may not be quite as effective as they have been in years past. And I completely understand that. I mean, if you can't break someone's personal space, how are you ever going to scare people? And there are some actors who that's their whole thing. That's their whole gig, is getting up in people's face and whispering in their ear and making them very uncomfortable. For those of you who are listening on headphones, I apologize. That was probably really creepy. But, you know, I get that. However, the question is not about, are we going to be stellar this year? Are we going to be incredible this year? Or are we going to survive this year? And, you know, I think when you shift into survival mode, you're also offering the guests something they don't get. They won't be able to get anywhere else. I mean, obviously, here in Florida with Halloween Horror Nights announcing that they will not be opening, there's going to be thousands and thousands of people looking for a place to enjoy a haunted attraction. So if a boutique style or smaller haunt can actually operate, they may have a pretty good year this year. Even if they have to pare down or scale back the kinds of scares that they do. Now, that's not to say that a 6-foot scare cannot be effective. You can reinforce those things with loud audio triggers, with lighting triggers, things that make the actor appear closer or more impactful than they are. But again, we have to design with that in mind. We have to look at, here are the minimum safety requirements that we have to meet. And that is physical separation of guests, physical separation of guests and actors, the appropriate facial coverings, and obviously the things like hand sanitizer and hand washing stations everywhere you possibly can put them. So, you know, is it going to be a great, perfect year creatively or financially? It's unlikely. It's unlikely. But I got to talk for just a minute about, you know, is it better to have a year where you keep your actors paid, you keep your brand out there, you satisfy the guests that are coming so that they continue to come back to you year after year, especially next year when hopefully, you know, we will have understood these new rules a little bit better and we'll be able to design appropriately. And, you know, even if we have to operate under reduced capacity as haunters, it's something that I think is going to get us through this year. We need to get through this year in order to figure out how we can move forward. Now, I will say one of the advantages that I think that's going on right now is the possibility of time ticketing. You know, we've been talking in the haunt industry, actually in the theme park industry, about timed ticketing forever. And there are so many advantages to selling time ticketed or reserved ticketing options for guests. It does several things. Number one, it puts the money in the pockets of the owners and operators before the guests even show up. So they've already got money in their pocket from the guest. Secondly, it allows you to track what are your needs as far as staffing. If, for example, you've only got tickets sold until 10:30 at night and your slated opening is until 12, well, you can reduce your labor significantly by letting everybody go after the last group goes through. And you don't have to worry about staying open because if you're only doing time ticketing, you know that they won't. I think the biggest advantage and the reason that time ticketing is so cool is it allows you to improve the guest experience because nobody's being crammed through in a conga line, while simultaneously expanding the number of people out over more nights. So instead of having these killer Saturdays and these Wednesdays that are like ghost towns and not in a good way, what time ticketing does is it allows you to spread the same number of guests out across more nights, which, like I said, makes the guest experience better, and it makes it significantly easier for you as an operator to put through the number of people that you want to put through. Now, for years, guests have fought the idea of time ticketing. They basically have said, no, we want to show up when we show up, and if we go, we'll just wait in line. It's fine. We'll just wait in line. Well, that's no longer true. That's no longer true in anything anymore, really. I mean, all theme parks that I know of, all zoos, all aquariums, museums, restaurants. For a while, it was even some retail establishments that you had to make a reservation ahead of time before you even showed up. And if you didn't, you weren't getting in. So that is now becoming commonplace. Our guests are now used to that. So if you are planning to open, my strongest recommendation is make certain you are doing timed ticketing. Guests will not fight it. They are less afraid of it than they used to be, or less frustrated, because it's now become very commonplace. Use that to your advantage. If you are going to open, definitely look into time ticketing. You also have to kind of look at the law of supply and demand. You know, I talked a little bit about what your business model is and how it differs from the large theme parks. If you have a law of supply and demand where you can guarantee that you and your family will never see another guest in the haunt, that's worth more money. Universal Studios has been open during the day for quite some time. And one of the things that I have heard, now I've not gone, but one of the things that I've heard from people who have gone is this is the way they want to do Universal all the time. They walk in, they don't really have to wait in queue for anything. They have, you know, timed schedule for their whole day. They don't really even have to they don't have to get in line for food. They make all their food reservations via their smartphone and just go and pick it up. They said it's like a concierge approach. If you are indeed doing a haunt that's a concierge approach, and there's less competition because other haunts have chosen not to open, then you can actually charge more. You can actually charge a premium, which will not only help control your costs and maybe perhaps counteract the reduction in total throughput, and you can give the guests an experience that is very personalized to them. So it's kind of like taking a negative and making it a positive, but it's going to require you to innovate and think differently. And then the most important thing you have to do after you innovate is educate. Make certain that you lead in all of your marketing, all of your social media, with here's what we're doing to keep you safe, because that will convince people that you've made an effort. Even more importantly than that, and I mentioned this, I think, in the last episode, you have to make sure that you carry through with all of those things that you've promised. If you've promised that, you know, everyone's going to be sanitized when they enter the space, then you better make sure that everybody gets sanitized. I don't know how you're going to do that, so I wouldn't promise it. But if that's what you're promising, then that's what you've got to make sure you deliver. But again, lead with it, promote with it, and be straightforward and stick to your guns. Once you say nobody gets in without a mask covering their mouth and nose, and yes, you have to add that because we've all seen those people with the masks around their chin or with their nose hanging out, but you have to basically say in your marketing material, in your promotional material, you must have a face covering that covers your mouth and nose, and it must be worn at all times. There are, you know, we always talk about here's the rules of the house. Well, we're just adding a couple more, okay? We're adding a few more rules to the house. Everybody's used to not touching, so we need to encourage that and make sure that that happens again. And quite honestly, having worked in theme park haunts for so long, with the conga line haunts, I knew guests who would just stop and let there be a gap in the line ahead of them just because they wanted to be more alone. So all of these things that we're asking guests to do, I don't think they're going to fight that much because it's already what they've asked for. They've already asked for the more boutique experience, and now we have the opportunity to deliver it. Now, I am not saying for a moment that all small haunts should open up. I am not. Look at your books. Look at your books. Look at what you need to make. Look at the sponsorship you can get from other people, and you make your own decisions. I am not a haunt owner. And I know that haunt owners have become very frustrated with me in the past because I apparently am very idealistic. But I will tell you that when haunts close, as a consultant, my job goes away. So I'm just as concerned about the haunted attraction industry, and actually more so the seasonal event industry and the theme park industry and the museum industry, because these are all my clients. And if we can't find a way to make this safe, then I'm out of work as well. Do I have the investment of money? No, but I do have the investment of time, and I still have to pay my mortgage. So I'm going to make decisions that are right for me as a consultant, and I expect every haunt owner to make those same decisions. Really, the purpose of this whole podcast is to make sure you're looking at all of your options. Because I know everybody's in a state of panic, or a lot of people are in a state of panic. So just look at these questions, ask them, and give yourself honest answers. Because again, the correct answer may be, we should hold off for a year. Another thing that you might want to consider, you know, you've heard me say take advantage of your assets. Another thing you might want to consider is looking at your parking lot. If you have a big field that you use as a parking lot, look at that as your show space and do some sort of a drive-in event. Drive-in movies are skyrocketing right now amidst the pandemic. And if you've got the opportunity to do a drive-in, park your car, do some big, horrible, scary, wonderful show up in front of everybody, and then have monsters and creatures come out and pop up in your car window to scare guests, I think that could be phenomenal. It's a great way to utilize your space in a completely different way. You know, if you have a big, you know, say you're a haunt that's out in the middle of a field somewhere, and you use this big open field as your parking lot, well, flip it around. Use that as your event space. Will it be financially feasible? I don't know. That's up to each individual haunt. Another thing that I think is important to recognize is individuality is going to be very, very important when it comes to what rules and regulations you're going to have to follow. A perfect example. There are two different counties here in the Tampa Bay area, and both of them have different restrictions and regulations as far as what masks you need to wear, what businesses need to supply, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things that, one of the questions that came up a while back was, who do you get the appropriate approval to open? And that's going to change, I think, in each and every area. I don't know whether it's the fire marshal or whether there's a health and safety office that you're going to need to check with, but that's going to take some research as well. So again, look at each individualized area. And that's not just, you know, it's county by county, state by state, country by country. Because as you know, I'm so proud to point out that I do have listeners outside the United States. Hello, all my friends in Canada. And I know I have a couple in New Zealand and wherever you are. Thank you for listening. But anyway, look at what you have to offer. Look at what you're going to be allowed to do. And if you do decide to move forward in your opening plans, and I know there's a lot of haunts out there that are kind of taking a wait-and-see attitude. Lucy's clearly not taking a wait-and-see attitude. I'm sure you can hear the demon dog barking in the background. But my suggestion is not only have your plan to open, but also have some backup plans. You know, I would say have your A-level, which is your new, you know, socially safe, physically distanced haunted attraction. That would be A-level. B-level might be you reduce from 50% down to 25%, and everybody goes through as a single guest or a single family, and nobody else gets to go through after that. And then finally, your next level down might be to set up some cameras, do a virtual version of your haunt, because you've already got your actors, you've already got your scenic, you've already got your costumes. Do it one night, record it, put it up online, and do a GoFundMe page. I don't know. I don't know whether any of these things are feasible, but they're just different ways of looking at things. I'm sure you guys will come up with far better ideas than I'm coming up with here. But have multiple levels of, gosh, do I need to, and one of the, you know, the way to do it may be to reduce staff. You may say, okay, we can do this if it's A level. We can reduce staff by 10% if it's this level. We can reduce staff by 25% if it's this level, and then you don't have to pay them. Number one and B. Sorry. Sometimes mouth moves faster than the brain does. So A, you can reduce your labor costs, and B, you can reduce the number of people in a room. Okay, so just kind of look at what those levels might be if you are moving forward. So let's assume that you've done all of this exercise and gone through all this business, and you decide, you know what, we can't open. It's not going to be worth it for us to open the doors. It's going to cost us more to run the event than we're going to make back from it. And like I said, don't go into it expecting to make this a killer year, because it's not going to be. It's about retaining your brand, retaining your customers, paying your actors, so that they want to come back in years to come. And, you know, maybe hopefully if you've done your research and you've looked at your books, you can come out of it with a minor profit. But this is not going to be a killer year for anybody, no matter how smart you are. So just go in with managed expectations. But if you decide not to open, if you decide, nope, best choice for us, we're going to keep our doors closed. And there are some very respectable haunts out there who have made this choice. So they've clearly done their homework and figured out we're going to, the best way to not lose money is to keep the doors closed and look at other options. So some of the other options might be finding different ways to utilize your space. You know, maybe you want to look at the possibility of opening up your space for small parties, family Halloween parties. And we'll get to this in more detail in just a second when we start talking about haunt fans. Just because haunted attractions are not open does not mean that you can't celebrate Halloween. And you may be able to say, you know, you may be able to put together a whole package that says, our haunt's not open unless you want to join us for a special haunted library party or a dungeon of terror party, up to whatever number of people your local jurisdiction will allow you to put into a room. And, you know, if you can sell snacks can get a temporary liquor license, whatever, you make it a party zone. That's an option. Another option is if, again, haunted attractions are starting to close down, there's going to be a lot of media folks who are going to look for new and different environments to shoot from, to do virtual programming, whether it may even be something as high-end as your local news, it may be, you know, some local blogger, whatever. See if you can work out some sort of rental agreement so that they can rent your beautifully decorated haunted attraction as their virtual location. Another thing you might want to consider is you've done a lot of work on this year already, I'm sure. We all have. And if for some reason you decide not to open, take everything that you've planned, don't lose it, hang on to it, and look at perhaps opening in February for Valentine's Day, or look perhaps at opening over the summer for 2 weeks. You know, when you look at horror films, their biggest times of release are over the summer and at Christmas time. So who's to say that, especially if people have a reduced haunted attraction year, that they won't be ready to be scared in person again come summer of 2021 or Valentine's Day. I know that there's some haunts out there that already do Valentine's Day, which is great. Maybe you want to expand that, beef that up a little bit. And certainly plan for next season. Take all the things that you've got. I mean, for example, this was supposed to be Halloween Horror Nights 30th, and I'm sure they had a lot of stuff planned that is going to go on the shelf for a year and come back next year. Now, they're a large corporation. They've got other revenue streams. They can do that. Independent haunters may not be able to wait all the way until next year. It may be tough to wait until February. I don't know. But again, it's just another option. The thing you have to recognize is conventional wisdom just went out the window in March. You know, all the things that we used to know about haunted attractions, they're just not true anymore. You know, we have to rethink how we do things. We have to be clever. We have to innovate. And don't just say, well, I can't do it the way I've always done it, so I'm not going to do it. That's not going to work. That's just not smart business. Now, you may discover after going through all of these exercises that the only way to not lose your shirt is to not open. I get that. But do your very best to at least go through the exercise and see what you can come up with. So now that we've talked about haunters, let's talk about some haunt fans. You know, those of us who were looking so forward to going to these huge haunted attractions, whether they're huge independently owned haunted attractions or huge theme park haunted attractions, we're now going, oh, well, I got to change my travel plans and now I don't know what to do. I've been every year since I was five. And, you know, you see all these really sad stories all over social media. But the thing is, Halloween is still Halloween. And if you like to be scared, there's plenty of ways that you can find to get scared. One of the things that we've seen all over the place is movie watch parties and virtual watch parties. Keep that going. you know, plan a curated night of the scariest movies you can possibly think of, and do them virtually, do them online, do watch parties online. Or if you've got somebody who's got a big backyard and a big inflatable screen and a projector, do them in the backyard. Make sure that, you know, you set up blankets that are 6 feet apart and everybody comes and watches a big scary movie at night under the stars. If you're up north or in a colder climate, you will probably have to bundle up a little bit more. Again, being in Florida, you have to put on insect repellent and hope that a hurricane doesn't come. But again, those watch parties, whether they're virtual or in person, great way to get scared, great way to continue celebrating Halloween. Another thing that certain companies are looking at are virtual trick-or-treating. And I haven't seen anybody who's quite defined this completely, but one of the things that is being discussed, at least, and I know this because one of my clients asked me about it and we kind of talked through the logistics and possibilities, but if you're a 501c3 organization or you work with one that wants to give something back to the community, see if you can find 5 or 6 different local vendors who are willing to do download codes for either things that they can download, downloadable codes for things that people can either download or have delivered to their house or go and pick up in person at a different time. You know, like if you've got a local donut shop that is willing to donate, I don't know, 500 donuts, then what you do is you do a sign up for virtual trick-or-treating and have kids go virtually either on Zoom or any of the other platforms that allow for that kind of social contact virtually, go from window to window to window and have somebody dressed in character and costume and do something creepy and then give them a download code so that they can go get one of those donuts the next time they're downtown at Bob's Donuts or whatever. It has a lot of possibility. It seems really intriguing. It's not quite as fun as running door to door like I did when I was a kid, or even quite as much fun as going out into the parking lot of a church and doing trunk or treat, but it's still a way to celebrate Halloween. And finally, you know, Halloween existed long before haunted attractions did. So find ways to just be scary. Get a bunch of your kids together and go into the bathroom with a candle and say Bloody Mary in front of the mirror. Go ahead and gather around a campfire and get out the book of Edgar Allan Poe stories and read them out loud. You know, literature and reading is an incredible way to create a scary environment. I say that as the writer of 4 different books filled with scary stuff. Not that they have to be mine. Not saying that. But they could be. But the idea is, don't be afraid to find other ways of sharing scary material. Because I promise you, if you've got some folks who are really into it, even grown-ups, I'm not just talking about kids, get some grown-ups and a bottle of wine and the Telltale Heart and a really good storyteller, you know, that's a great way to celebrate Halloween. You could also do it so that it becomes a group reading. I mean, there's all kinds of opportunities. I know this makes me sound like a total nerd, but I don't care because I love horror literature. So, you know, don't be afraid to step back, step away from technology a little bit and look at the printed word, because it could be a great way to celebrate Halloween. So I guess to answer the question, is Halloween dead? The answer is clearly no, it is not. Halloween is going to survive this the same way it survived 9/11, the same way it has survived weather issues, the same way it has survived for, you know, really generations. It's just changed. And the way Halloween used to be celebrated and the way it's going to be celebrated, it's going to continue to evolve. So don't think for a moment that Halloween is gone. Is this going to be a very different year? Yes. Is it going to be a redefining year for all Halloweens to come? Perhaps. But the most important thing to recognize is if you like to be scared or if you like to scare people, you will still have the opportunity to do that just in a different format. So make sure that you don't over dramatically say, oh my gosh, no one's going to be open. The Halloween season is over. My life is going to end. It's not. Now, Are there people who are going to have challenges with businesses? I am not for a moment saying that that's not a reality. It is. But you can always find alternatives. And even if it means you work harder at your day job this year so that next year you can do twice the haunt, you know, even home haunters, put all the stuff back in the garage for another year and just keep adding to it. So when you come back in 21, oh my gosh, you're going to blow the neighbor's socks off. But haunting, Halloween is not dead. It is simply not dead. We just have to find new ways to resuscitate it. Now, this is the time normally in my show where I do all of my commercial stuff and I talk about all the things that I've got coming up. Well, obviously, I'm not traveling nearly as much as I used to, but I do have some things. I have a virtual event coming up. Not only have I been doing some stuff with Haunt Connect, I've also got an interview coming up with IAPA. Coming up very soon. It's the date's changed a couple of times. I believe it is August 11th currently, and I'll be sitting on a panel. The International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions have asked me to be on a panel talking about seasonal events and how they can be safe. And so I'll be on that panel. And like I said, I think it's August 11th. If you're members of IAPA, you should be receiving information very shortly as to how to tune into that one. I'm also part of the Tampa International Fringe Festival. Now, Tampa International Fringe Festival is normally a live event that takes place here in Tampa, Florida. But obviously this year it's not. So they got a grant to do a virtual event, which will start August 1st and runs through, I believe, either the 16th or the 19th. I'm not certain. But I do have a show in that as well. And it's a show called Awake in the Dark, just like the name of my last book. And I will be doing readings from all four of my books. And it was recorded live, without an audience, unfortunately. But it was recorded live at a small bar in Ybor City here in Tampa called Crowbar. And I've gone back and I'm in the process of editing it right now. And I've added sound effects and, you know, creepy noises and that sort of thing. So hopefully you can check that out as part of Tampa International Fringe Festival. Just search Tampa International Fringe Festival and you'll find it. Something that has been getting a lot of legs right now on social media is I did an article in tribute of my dear friend Robbie LaPree, and I want to thank Philip Hernandez and really the entire team at Seasonal Entertainment Source Magazine and the Haunted Attraction Network for letting me write this article about Robbie. It's called what happened was Seasonal Entertainment Source decided to do an entire issue that is dedicated to remembering Robbie. And when I was asked to write the lead-off article, I was absolutely thrilled, having worked with her for many years. And she's been a friend of mine, or was a friend of mine, for many years. For those of you who didn't know Robbie LaPree, she was part of the initial team with Hallow Scream and very much involved with Hallow Scream at Busch Gardens in Tampa for 18 years. She was known throughout the haunted attraction industry. She received a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2018 from the Haunted Attraction Association. Just a wonderful human being. And I got to write this great article, which is now all over the internet, and as well as the incredible artwork for the cover of the magazine, which is Robbie holding hands with all these wonderful monsters. And like I said, she passed away earlier this year. So it's a great little tribute, and it was a very very therapeutic thing to do. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And let's see. Oh, finally, last but certainly not least, I am just about to kick off the very first issue of my email newsletter. I've put together a monthly email newsletter, which the very first issue will go out on August 13th. And it talks about pretty much everything I do. It talks about the podcast. It talks about the writings that I do. It talks about the artwork. It talks about the projects, the artwork as far as painting goes. It talks about the projects that I'm working on with my clients. And I think the coolest thing right now is it does have some members-only content. There's a bunch of stuff that is going to come out that is members-only, and that starts the moment you sign up. If you go to scottswenson.com and click on the link right underneath my picture that says, sign up for my newsletter, click here. Just click on that link and give us your email address. Once you verify your email address, you will receive a PDF right off the bat, special gift, thank you for joining kind of gift, that has selections of stuff from all my books, a couple of images of paintings that I've done recently, as well as the first chapter of Follow the Story. And like I said, some of this stuff is member exclusive. Even in that particular PDF, there's one particular poem that has never been published that I've been holding on to and decided, well, this is a perfect way to say thank you to people who are joining up on the newsletter. And then, like I said, the first one starts on August 13th, and it is it's going to have, again, updates on everything, and it will have links to some very, I think, useful members-only content, and that is in the form of three different recordings that you can download and use however you wish. One of them is a produced voiceover recording reminding guests in a haunter's queue to wear their mask, to keep their hands to themselves, and keep their distance. It's sort of the COVID safety holy trinity, I guess. The second one is, I call it like a public service announcement, basically telling everybody that this Halloween you should all wear your masks. And then the last one is a recording that you can use for your voicemail, and it's for haunters during the haunt season. So I'm not going to tell you anymore. Join the newsletter and you'll be able to not only get the PDF of some of my favorite writings and stuff, but then in August you will get the downloads, or the ability to download and use however you wish, these three different recordings. So again, go to scottswenson.com, click on the link under my picture on the main landing page, and give us your email. And no, it will not be sold. It will not be spammed. You will get one email from us per month, and you can stop at any time. So please join the newsletter, and don't worry. Halloween is not dead. It's just being redefined right now. This is Scott Swenson from A Scott in the Dark. Until next time, rest in peace.